Cruisecontrol.com/radio.
First of all, that what you are doing is monumental. And this is not easy. And you all are literally, with this show, you have literally created something out of nothing. And everybody can't do that. What I think is so unique about you all is that when I'm listening to you all, because there are things that I don't know about your world, you all have a wholly different kind of conversation. You have no ideas what your conversation feels like to my ears. It's so different. Because I don't have the opportunity and hear how you guys philosophize about reality. This is the only place that I get that in my entire life. What you do is significant because I'm not alone in it. A whole lot of folk over 40 years of age don't have that experience. Their kids are out of the house and grown. When I think of you all as giving us a perspective on popular culture. Not just what's happening, because Entertainment Tonight will tell us what's happening, but you are also giving us perspective on how it impacts real people's lives. And that's the qualitative difference in what you're doing.
You're about to listen to the Urban Cafe.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. Thank you for tuning in on this rainy Tampa Bay morning. Be safe out there on the roads. A lot of thunderstorms headed this way. Polk County and Pinellas County are already receiving the brunt of that. So just be safe. Possible tornado warnings maybe later. So, yes, I wish you a safe Sunday.
Absolutely.
So let's go around the studio.
Oh, yeah. Good morning. This is Jamal. I just wanted to say, yesterday I watched the Army-Navy football game. It's amazing that they're still playing football. Like, what do they say? It's like two or three plays in a dust of cloud or whatnot. But I really enjoyed that game, though. It was cool.
It is an American tradition, if you will. I mean, and so many just historical figures have either gone to West Point or gone to the Naval Academy in Annapolis and played for the team, right?
Yeah. And you know one thing, I'm sorry, I'm having a long introduction. One thing I did like about that was, and I could see the respect, because, you know, like, you obviously went to Ohio State. I went to Michigan. You know, it gets a little rowdy sometimes.
I'm sorry.
There was a lot of respect in that game, and it just shows the discipline that people have who tend those institutions. I really appreciated that game.
Yeah, and in the end, they're going to be on the front lines together.
Yeah, and they both sang their songs, and I mean, it was amazing.
That it is pretty cool, actually. Was that in Philadelphia?
It was wherever. I'm trying to think. All I know is it was cold. Like, it was really cold out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and most of the eastern seaboard is the storm that we're kind of getting is part of the overall storm that's hit the eastern seaboard with just some really low temperatures. So keep warm up there and up north. You know, don't move down to Florida. just kidding.
Good morning. This is Nestor, your brother in peace, love, and justice. What's up?
Good morning, everybody. This is Claire. Taking care of everyone.
We got Claire on Facebook Live and taking a look at our emails.
Love to hear your comments. We're going to try and respond to them.
Yes, we will. And then, so we do have Facebook Live here today. I'm controlling the board. Shout out to Joe, who's been helped me out, in case he's listening. Appreciate that, Joe. You can also call into the studio again at 813-239-9663. We got a really good show for you today. We're going to be talking, do a couple quick takes. We're going to be talking about Nestor's concept of social resiliency, which is a very fascinating concept, and then how that possibly plays into a revised affirmative action, if you will. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about what is affirmative action, you know, by law, how affirmative action also is intertwined a little bit with Title IX. And that will be more on the second part of the show. And I know Jamal's really interested in talking about his perspective and some of the stuff that, you know, being a lawyer, how that works on his side. And so, again, thank you for tuning in. From a quick take perspective, there's just so much going on. But I'm going to just a quick on December 6th, so only 3 days ago. It's been reported in the news. I'm specifically going to be quoting BuzzFeed. The Democrats have officially gained 40 seats in the House of Representatives. Mm. So a Democratic race in California House was called erroneously for the Republican incumbent on election night, giving the party the Democratic Party, a net gain of 40 seats in the House, which again is the largest historical turnaround for them. It's been the largest actual electoral vote margin for like 40 years. Wow. And the actual by percentage as no largest electoral vote margin ever, based on just straight millions of people who voted more for the Democrats than they did for the Republicans in the midterms. But then you have to obviously take that and take into account that we have a larger population than we did historically. So, but when you look at it from a percentage perspective, it's also the largest percentage difference in voting margin since for like 40 or 50 years, something like that. So and they, you know, I believe 7 governorships, hundreds of state legislative seats.
Yep.
There's some very interesting things going on in Wisconsin. The outgoing state legislature is actually passing laws or attempting to pass laws. Actually, they did pass. They passed them in the legislature. They still require a governor vote. The governor who was defeated, Scott Walker, he's going to be governor until December 31st or so. And then what they're trying to do is they're trying to remove some of the executive powers from the governorship in Wisconsin. Things like the attorney general for the state of Wisconsin would have to first go to the state legislature to seek approval on important cases before he brings it up. He or she brings it up. I don't know if it's a female or a male who's elected there for AG. Just all sorts of different removal of power that they're trying to do as they're headed out the door. Wisconsin is going to be a Republican legislature, but they're going to have a Democratic governor who defeated the incumbent Scott Walker. And so that's pretty fascinating, isn't it?
That is, yeah.
And so some people say that the outgoing Republicans are not respecting the electoral process. You know, there is a reason why the constituents in Wisconsin voted for a Democratic governor over Scott Walker, and that they should respect that. But and so what they're trying to do out the door is basically, you know, change the laws of the state to minimize the power of the governor, who, even if he still remained with the same powers, he's still going to have a Republican legislature against him. And it's going to be a very interesting next 2 years. And in Wisconsin, every 2 years, every single legislature seat is up for election.
Wow.
That's
insanity.
Yeah. In 2020, right?
In 2020.
Because you're always running.
You're always running. Which I never understood. There needs to be some continuity, right? You know, in order to get things done. Yeah. So in Wisconsin, it's every 2 years. In the state of Florida, it's not. And so,
well, it is for House seats.
But I'm talking about state legislature.
Yeah.
It is for House seats?
For state legislature, House seats in the state of Florida, it's every 2 years.
What about state senators? Senate,
yeah. No, 4 years.
Okay. Yeah. But in their case, I think it's a unicameral body, I believe. I got to take a look at Wisconsin. But now, the reason I mentioned Wisconsin, because it was just very fascinating dynamic of where we're at about this. Talking about...
And isn't Wisconsin... were they the ones who were accused of like major gerrymandering? Or is that a different state?
It was Pennsylvania.
There are so many states. Oh, okay. So it's Pennsylvania where it shows that the Electoral College, the popular vote was for Democrats, but I don't think they picked up any seats or something like that. There was some breakdown of democracy, truthfully.
Yeah.
Or that's what it feels like, you know, gerrymandering.
Yeah. And I think we should have a show on gerrymandering.
I definitely think we should educate on that.
Like, what is gerrymandering?
Yeah.
You know, how do we prevent gerrymandering?
There are so many people out there that have no idea.
They don't realize how it affects them.
It is ruthless, ugly politics. And I get it. People gerrymander on both sides. The second you get in positions of power, you want to make it work for you to keep yourself in power. But the extent by which gerrymandering has gone in some states is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
It's incredible.
And it goes both ways, right? Like, the Democrats shouldn't be gerrymandering either.
Yeah, agreed.
And so, although, you know, to my knowledge, there hasn't been any instances.
It's like people shouldn't be or should. That could be your opinion.
So, in my opinion... Here comes Jamal. In my opinion, the electoral process should be whoever gained the most votes should have an. So if the Republicans has 60% of the vote total, then 60% of their House should be
right. But you know, the Electoral College affects that.
Well, I'm talking specifically at the state level, though.
I think we ought to also talk about the Electoral College. It's something that it was put in place by our forefathers to ensure that the public didn't completely take over. And it's old and outdated. We need to look at it.
There's a lot of arguments against it. There are some arguments in favor of it too. But we'll talk about that in another show. But,
And if you want to hear a show about gerrymandering, or if you think it's a great topic, or you know somebody who might be able to speak to it, certainly shoot us a line on Facebook, or you can certainly text or
just contact the show. Yep. And so, and then we have another quick.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention North Carolina. there has been alleged voter fraud in North Carolina. Specifically, there's a particular. Let's see. The community. What is
the Blandon County?
Yes, that county. So they've been accused of election fraud. So. The Board of Elections over there will not certify the elections because the Republican...
Who?
The Board of Elections.
No, not the second part. You said the Republicans? Oh, wow.
Oh, sorry. Should I not have said that? Yeah, my bad. I know. What a shocker. So, apparently, a Republican won, new to politics... won in the primary, ousted out an incumbent, but then they won by 905 votes. The crazy thing about that, and the reason why, part of the reason why it won't get certified, is because to win by 905 votes, that would have required in that county every single Republican to vote for this person, every single independent, and a few Democrats. Mm. And I mean, if you want to scream out fraud, every single Republican, every single independent, and a few Democrats. So they're saying it just doesn't make sense. It looks too sketchy. It's just mad questionable.
Yeah, and so the North Carolina state investigators are working with federal prosecutors and probing the irregularities. And so it turns out, so the election was originally called in favor of Mark Harris, the Republican, against the Democrat Dan McCready. But it turns out that there was a Republican operative who was basically apparently absentee ballots. And so there's actually a couple articles out there of folks who didn't even vote. They didn't show up to the midterm election to vote.
That officially cast a vote.
That officially casted a vote. Wow. So that, hence the absentee ballots. So the mail-in ballots.
Yeah, the mail-in ballots. This guy, what was his name again?
Eason.
He recruited a bunch of volunteers out and start collecting. Was it Eason?
No, Eason was an example of one of the people who didn't cast a vote, but apparently did vote.
Yeah. So this guy, whatever his name is, he recruited a bunch of volunteers to go out and collect absentee ballots, which is illegal. Mm-hmm. And when those absentee ballots came in, there were people, just as mentioned, that had voted, that never voted. Or there were people who voted whose absentee ballot either disappeared or showed that when they showed up to vote, they couldn't because they had already cast a ballot.
Yeah. Wow. The person in question, his name is Leslie McCrae Dulles.
Okay,
that's the person, the Republican operative, who's basically been working in North Carolina apparently for 8 years now.
Wow.
That's insane.
So somebody must have known that was happening.
Yeah, so he actually apparently has been working with the Harris campaign an official capacity. Mm. And so the question is, did Harris know that this gentleman, this Republican operative, was doing this? They also did statistical analysis. Again, mathematics is so important, going back to our STEM, right?
Yep.
So there was an undisparate amount of absentee ballots casted in that specific county as compared to the other counties around the state. And that's kind of that what they call that... That margin of error, if you will, was so distinct that it cast people started looking at it. The North Carolina State Election Authorities.
Yep.
I was like, why do we have so many more absentee ballots in this specific area as opposed to the rest of the state? And that's kind of what started the conversation.
Yeah.
And then now there's it's
now there's
crazy.
A full on investigation. They are talking about a possible. They're going to have to do a runoff or another vote.
Awesome.
I know both contenders for that seat, they are open to that. It's an unfortunate thing.
It is an unfortunate thing. I do think they should cast another vote. It's unfortunate because the constituents are going to have to pay for another election.
Well, right. They're going to have to pay for another election, but I think it's unfortunate because even if Harris wins, there are still going to be tons of people that question that. Mm-hmm. And the second we have our constituents questioning our democracy or the process, then it's a de-evolution of democracy.
Absolutely. We already have a problem with getting people out to vote. And now when they see stories like this, it's going to just break it down more.
They get disenfranchised.
Absolutely.
Right.
They're like, my vote doesn't care.
They don't trust anything. Yeah. If our government isn't representing us, then who is?
Yeah. There is another. So if the election is not held in North Carolina, so the Democrats ought now with Nancy Pelosi in charge, they do have the option in D.C. at the U.S. House in January once the Democrats regain control to not seat Representative Harris. So that's actually something I didn't even know
really?
They could do that. Yeah, so they can actually determine that this, you know, based on. Based on what they're seeing, I don't know the exact nomenclature, but they have the power to say no. Representative Harris, it cannot seat at this.
Wow.
This specific for the
I
next
didn't
2 years.
Know yeah, that was possible.
Yeah, I didn't know that was possible either.
Well, they probably haven't used it in a long time. Yeah.
See, but that's when we get down slippery slope, right? Because if
it can be used either way,
exactly, it could be used against or in favor of.
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, that just get. Hopefully, we won't have to go down that road.
Yeah, hopefully, North Carolina just has another election to make the determination.
Yep.
Yeah. So some very interesting things. I know the elections happened a while ago. It's just the repercussions just keep on coming through. Obviously, some very significant things happened this week in the related to the Mueller investigation into Michael Cohen, the former personal lawyer for Donald Trump, and just, you know, high level, essentially I just wanted to differentiate the Mueller investigation had some findings come out, but the Cohen actually was working with a Southern District attorney in Manhattan. Now, what happened there is basically they're saying that election. So they didn't disclose the payments made by Cohen to the porn actresses should have been disclosed.
Well, by Trump via Cohen.
Yes, that's what they're saying. Well, Trump is addressed as individual one in the documentation. Mm-hmm. His name is never put out there. But everybody knows that basically they're saying that individual one. Directed that Michael Cohen took action, but because of a directive from individual one to make these payments. These payments should have been disclosed as part of a campaign contribution or donation. Mm-hmm. They also would have exceeded the amount because I think the legal amount was $2,700. These were over six-figure payments. And so by not disclosing that, that's technically electoral fraud.
Right.
Electoral finance
fraud. And so that literally happened this week. And that was not from the Mueller investigation. That was the Southern District in Manhattan that actually issued that.
Wow.
And those were findings when they raided Cohen's office. They found all this documentation and paperwork and so forth. And that was one of the things that came out of Cohen's office. But that was out of Mueller's directive.
Mm-hmm.
So he pushed it. He saw it, that it could potentially be a crime. So he went ahead and gave that documentation over to the Southern District, which in turn did their own investigation and determined that it is indeed a crime, or at least they're saying so.
And I just want to put out that 45 right now continues to say, see, look, this clears me, right? No collusion. You don't see any collusion in this. And that's because they are two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
Mueller is still working on his investigation. There's going to be a full report, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost like an aside. This is just this separate thing.
This is electoral
that doesn't
fraud.
Address. Yeah.
But also collusion. The way that they did it makes it more viable because it's less of a slippery slope. New York can use their laws.
Well, this
something.
Well, what's interesting about this actually is so it's the Southern District. This is actually an attorney general federal attorney general. So he reports to the Department of Justice. As it turns out, this was somebody who was appointed by Trump himself. So the AG who's bringing down these electoral finance charges was actually appointed by Trump in his first year in office. So this is actually a Republican appointee bringing charges against Michael Cohen and individual one, who everyone knows as President Trump. And so it's very fascinating. We'll see what happens. There's some people say that you technically can't indict a sitting president. That's really never been challenged, because when Nixon had his Watergate scandal, he actually stepped down. He made an agreement with the vice president for a presidential pardon. So the moment he stepped down, the vice president became president and gave him a presidential pardon. And so we never saw Nixon indicted. So we don't know, in the history of the United States, we don't know if that's constitutional, even for a sitting president to be indicted. A lot of constitutional scholars will say yes. And other scholars will say no. And so it's very interesting to see what's going to happen with that. And again, I'm just stating this not to be partisan. I'm stating this as facts. These are facts. This is what's going on. And people need to be aware of the differences between the investigation being run by Mueller and what's happening in the Southern District of New York.
I'd like to suggest that we keep a finger on this story and later on, as more things develop, keep reporting about it.
I agree. I agree 100%.
I don't think we have a choice, truthfully. Well,
because that's the only way that some people learn about it, and then they'll go investigate it themselves and see what we're talking about.
I agree. And some people may say we're beating a dead horse. I don't want to hear about it anymore, but I just feel it's very important. Yeah.
So the horse isn't dead. Sorry.
So we've touched on a couple things on our quick takes here this morning. We're going to jump to a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about a very interesting concept called social resiliency. So thank you all very much for listening to The Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5.
Tell me what's done in the dark, we'll find a way to shine. I done did so much that when you see, you might go blind. What's done in the dark, we'll always find a way to shine. I done did so much that when you see, you might go blind.
Hi, this is Chuck Core Jr., host of Flashback Friday. I'm not single, but I love to mingle. Mingle with me each and every Friday from 10 to midnight. The best in blues, R&B, and Southern soul. Let me be the last man to put something in your ear hole. WMNF Tampa, the right station on the left-hand side of your dial. 88.5 FM.
CeCe Tenille was a showstopper at the WMNF tributes to Aretha Franklin in October. The Orlando singer worked the stage with sass and charm, and what a voice.
You're no good. Heartbreak.
We decided we need to see more CeCe Tenille and are excited that her band will play our series at the Attic in Ybor City, January 11th.
Listen now.
CeCe Tenille and Soul Commotion play R&B, soul, and roots music. Ari Kai opens the show. The St. Petersburg resident is a singer, writer, and ukulele player whose music includes folk, soul, rap, and indie.
I need a time machine back to chivalry, back when ship was sweet, was it?
CeCe Tenille and Ari Kai, Friday, January 11th at the Attic in Ybor City.
Two Worlds, Indigenous Radio.
I'm afraid white America is incapable of understanding.
Every Sunday night from 9 to 11 p.m., join me. My name is Al Vaughn. I'll be your host for the 2 hours of Two Worlds, getting the music played, getting the stories told. And every other Sunday, I'll be joined by Emily Jeffries.
It takes warrior women with strong minds.
Strong hearts.
Hosting Voices of Our People, letting you know a little bit about what's going on in Indian country. Two Worlds, Indigenous Radio, standing in solidarity with the indigenous people of this continent. Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m.
WMNF presents the second Alt Country Hoedown with four quality headline bands: Reckless Kelly, Nikki Lane, Dale Watson, Jason D. Williams,
Ooh, Lord, wild, but I'm way too wild.
The Oak Hill Drifters kick off the wild evening of music at 6 p.m. Saturday, January 26th at Skipper's. Get your tickets now. For more information, go to WMNF.org events.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
Come on, you good?
Come on. I know you like that.
Yeah, you good. Welcome back.
I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
Welcome back. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We've had a very interesting quick take conversation this morning, talking about some of the things on the news. Again, for those of you in the Tampa Bay area, there's a huge thunderstorm rolling through. I see it coming on the TV here. Pinellas and Polk, it started there. Now it's rolling through Hillsborough County or starting to roll through Hillsborough County. So just be safe out there, especially if you had a day planned on the water. I would probably think about that twice. And so with that being said, I want to move into a very interesting topic that Nestor Ortiz, our latest TUC member, has come up with, talking about social resiliency. And Nestor's working our Facebook Live trying to – he's the only person to adapt at this right now and trying to figure out.
I'm putting a comment on here. Sorry that we're sideways.
Yeah, we're sorry for making people dizzy with our Facebook Live. But with that being said, please comment on Facebook Live, anything. Also, you can call the studio at 813-239-9663. Or you can send us a text message at 813-433-0885. I do want to do a quick shout out to the Florida Law Group. Please support for WMNF comes from our members and the Florida Law Group, protecting the rights of the wrongfully injured since 1984. The Florida Law Group is dedicated to creating strong and lasting connections with their clients and our community. More at thefloridalawgroup.com. And so, with that being said, so our Facebook Live is
temporarily down, but it'll come back up.
Yeah, yeah. When we go to our next break, we'll talk. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
And we apologize. we need Juju. We need Juju.
Yeah, I know, right?
We miss him. We miss you, Juju.
And so we're gonna go ahead and start talking about social resiliency, Nestor. And Nestor and I had an offline conversation about this, and it's a pretty fascinating concept. Can you tell us a bit more?
So yeah, social resiliency. So that really. Social resiliency, let me backtrack. Let me give you a little bit of history. So a few years back, things started getting challenged. Affirmative action, actually, started getting challenged in the courts. And I want to say it was maybe 2012 or 2013. I don't remember which. But they started, universities started really talking about banning affirmative action, banning quotas, banning the thing, making entrance determinations based on race or any of those things. Those started to get challenged in the court. Mm-hmm. And people kept saying, you know, there's no need for affirmative action anymore. There's, you know, no problems and Obama's the president, so racism is gone. And, you know, we heard that a lot. So people just started challenging and people are still challenging, right? You have what's going on in the case that is sure to end up in the Supreme Court with the case against Harvard. Mm-hmm. So challenges are happening. And now that there is a Supreme Court that's more conservative, there is a strong chance that affirmative action will just kind of go away altogether. Yeah.
There's a couple of things that, yeah, affirmative action, a couple of...
Yeah, I mean, there...
Versus way they're still chipping away
so at. There are definitely concerns out there. And I see you have some issues with that.
I'm ready to go in on affirmative action, talk about that. But I didn't know if you wanted to just about social resiliency.
Yeah, let me okay, go in on social resiliency.
Okay.
So I started thinking about that a few years back. I started processing through mm-hmm. how do you right a wrong that is generational, right? How do you adjust? A funny thing, I don't know if I was watching something or if I was just reading. I think I was reading something online yesterday and it talked about the 15... 15-
Service
office in Ruskin has issued a tornado warning for northeastern Pasco County in west central Florida, southeastern Hernando County in west central Florida, until 10 a.m. At 9:32 a.m., a severe thunderstorm capable of producing a tornado was located 8 miles south of Hernando County Airport, or 11 miles southeast of Spring Hill, moving east at 30 miles an hour. Hazard, tornado. Source, radar indicated rotation. Impact, flying debris will be dangerous to those caught without shelter. Mobile homes will be damaged or destroyed. Damage to roofs, windows, and vehicles will occur. Tree damage is likely. This dangerous storm will be near St. Leo around 9:50 a.m. Dade City around 9:55 a.m. Other locations impacted by this tornadic thunderstorm include Darby, San Antonio, Dade City North, Blanton, St. Leo, Ridge Manor, Lacoochee, and Shady Hills. Take cover now. Move to an interior room on the lowest floor of a sturdy building. Avoid windows. If you are outdoors, in a mobile home, or in a vehicle, move to the closest substantial shelter and protect yourself from flying debris. Heavy rainfall may hide this tornado. Do not wait to see or hear the tornado. Take cover now. Repeating, a tornado warning has been issued until 10 a.m. for the following county, Pasco, Florida.
Equality says, oh, everybody has access to that fence, so everybody should see over it. Equity is giving some steps on that fence for the person that's never been to it. Mm-hmm. So for me, I started processing through that, and with affirmative action potentially going away, I started thinking, how do we right that wrong without bringing race into it? And that's where social resiliency comes in. So when you look at people, young people that are applying for college, right? They have their SAT score, the ACT score, they have their grades from school, they have their weighted GPA. In some cases now, when I was a kid, it was like 4 point something. Mm-hmm. Some cases now, there are kids graduating with like a 10.65 GPA, oh weighted to me, which is insane.
But I never understood that.
Yeah, I still don't understand it. My kids are in school. but I started looking at that, and these students that have... And we're not talking about a race thing. We're talking about a wealth thing. It just disproportionately impacts more people of color, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we right that wrong? So for me, you have a kid. So let's take Ellen. Ellen is, she's got access to resources. She's got two parents. She's got a car. She lives in a home with a nice school district. You know, she doesn't have to worry about eating or about shelter or about any of those things. So she has access to resources. She gets a weighted 9.65 GPA, right? So she applies to a college, all those things. You have Alex, on the other hand, who has grown up in a single parent family, high crime neighborhood. The school is an F school, you know, all of these things that you hear about in poor communities of color. So for me, if we decide to take away that race piece, then I feel like we should replace it with something, right? Because again, we're still living with generational poverty. We're still living with generational issues. So for me, I started thinking about, why don't we create something called a social resiliency score? Because this Alex kid may have gotten a 4.0. It's not a weighted 9.65, but what should weigh something is what Alex has gone through to get that 4.0. That 4.0 should be just as valuable as that weighted 9.65 that Ellen provided. But it's not, because they're only focused on GPAs. And if we take away the race factor, if we take away affirmative action, then you put them scores together. And yeah, you're always going to pick Ellen, because she's always... On paper, she looks amazing, but it's not taking into account that she has every resource she needs to have, mm-hmm. and Alex has none. So for me, social resilience is taking all of those things that Alex had to fight against and adding weight to that as well. So a couple of examples would be, let's say it's a point system. You give 1 point for a young person that grew up in a zip code that has high poverty. Another point for a young person that has grown up in a zip code that has high crime. Another point for a young person that has grown up in a school that's had on average a D or an F score. So taking those things into account, that produces a score, right? A resiliency score. So when you take that Alex's GPA of a 4.0 and then you combine it with this social resiliency score, then that means something, right? It means this kid is going to absolutely succeed because even with no resources, this kid pulled in a 4.0 GPA.
Right.
So for me, that's where it came from.
And that's a pretty fascinating concept. And so again, for our listeners out there, you listen to the Urban Cafe, Nestor was talking about his concept of a modified admission process using something called a social resiliency score. And admission process for college or technical school or community college, any school, right? Even maybe some of the private schools, possibly.
Yeah.
And so you can call us at 813-239-9663. We got Claire Manning Facebook Live. We're up there.
Although we're down right now. We're still down.
Oh, that's strange. Okay, well, I'll have to take a look. Take a look at that, and then we will be on Facebook here again shortly, and then but you can call us at 813-239-9663. You can text us at 813-433-0885. If you have any experience with affirmative action and would like to call in, please let us know about your own and personal experience with that. With that being said, though, I do want to read from the National Conference of State Legislators, just to, as a baseline. Affirmative action policies are those in which an institution or organization actively engages in efforts to improve opportunities for historically excluded groups in American society. Affirmative action policies often focus on employment and education in institutions of higher education. Affirmative action refers to admission policies that provide equal access, which is something that Nestor mentioned, to education for those groups that have been historically excluded or underrepresented, such as women and minorities. And then there's obviously some controversy surrounding the constitutionality of affirmative action, and it's been a very heated debate in society for a while now. Claire?
I'd like to ask Nestor, what do you think that the reason why they would want to get rid of this, why do they, I mean, it's a good system. I've watched it. Well, I watched it come in, and I've watched it kind of go through this demise right now.
Yeah. Well, there are people, and I hate the term, but there are people that genuinely believe that affirmative action is reverse discrimination or reverse racism. So I just want to be very clear that reverse discrimination, that's fine. They can feel that that is the case. Reverse racism is not a thing. I want to be very clear. It doesn't mean that there aren't people that can't exhibit those behaviors, but there is no such thing. There is a thing because people talk about it, but there really is no such thing as reverse racism, just because racism is an ism and it requires people in power to oppress people not in power.
Right.
It reminds
people of color
me,
are not in power.
Right. It reminds me of when I saw with the insurances, the managed care come in the 90s. I watched it come in, and it's the same kind of thing where the colleges think that maybe they'd get more money if they didn't have to deal with this program. So
yeah,
it's a way for them to demonize it, whatever, and break it down so they can get rid of it, because colleges become business.
It's absolutely
not about the education, but we should get back to being about the education on all levels. Our country is creating dumb folk.
Yeah.
Sorry to say, but we got some bad education systems nationwide. Why aren't we supporting them? We have to go, you know, no complaining about getting immigrants from other countries to do the jobs that our people don't want to do. We got to educate our people. We got to bring them up. And I don't care what race they are.
Yeah.
Can I go in on affirmative action now?
Well,
I've been waiting for Jamal to come in on
Wait. Before you do, Jamal.
He's been sitting quietly.
Really quick.
And again,
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
So really quick, I just want to draw a distinction, right? The social resiliency score applies to anybody,
right?
This is not like exclusively people of color. We are no longer in a place where race is the number one factor. I mean, it is. It is the number one factor still, but we are no longer, I feel like the biggest gap right now is the wealth gap, right?
Yeah. You know, I think that, and even for what it's worth, it depends on how people view things such as slavery or whatnot. I feel like, I mean, money, like race is a huge factor, but there are some arguments that wealth has always been the biggest factor. I mean, in the history of this earth, I mean,
you mean wealth disparity?
Oh, well, I mean, like, you know, if someone's born rich, I mean, it's a whole new world. Because even this is what I'm saying, like, even in America now, let's say you have someone black, you have someone white, you know, depending on their circumstances and how they're raised and whatnot in their community, they can try to achieve similar status. And even in some other countries to that extent, but wealth, I mean, if you have a certain head start with wealth, I mean, it could be very difficult to some people to catch up. And then going along with that, I know there have been some arguments that after slavery, what the majority of wealthy whites were trying to do was make a distinction between blacks and whites for wealth purposes, to maintain their wealth and keep other poor whites along with the poor blacks, have them feuding. So at least I'm white, I'm not black. But at the same time, you know, that's that 99%. Like, if they worry about blacks, they won't worry about us having all the money. Mm-hmm. You know, wealth is, I mean, it's an argument you can make on both sides, which one is more important, race or wealth. But
I would agree.
I would agree too.
I think a social resiliency score helps to kind of balance that. Help say we're responding to both this people of color issue and access, but we're also responding to those people, those poor white people that also feel disenfranchised, that also feel like the system's not created for them. Why are people claiming, you know, all this privilege exists for white people when me as a poor white person, I'm living through it. I'm still struggling. I'm still doing all these other things. This social resiliency score aims to support them as well.
And so that's very, very interesting. I have actually was looking up here. So on the ACLU website, you know, they have pros and cons listed for in favor of affirmative action and against affirmative action. And it kind of lays exactly what Jamal and Nestor were talking about regarding wealth disparities, right? So here's a comment from Clint Bullock, who was the director of the Goldwater Institute. And in 2009, he published an article in Forbes magazine, and he says, quote, "When blacks and Hispanics flunk examinations, the cause is less likely to be discrimination than the appalling educational conditions to which most economically disadvantaged black and Hispanic children are consigned. Affirmative action programs that leapfrog less qualified minorities over more qualified non-minorities sweep these systematic problems under the carpet. As such, race-based affirmative action programs perpetuate fraud upon the very groups that they are designed to help." And that's kind of fascinating because it touched basically on something that Claire mentioned about the educational system not being up to par. Jamal, you mentioned about wealth disparities. And so is there really still... Is affirmative action really not, shouldn't be about race anymore as much as the wealth disparities that are existent in Hispanic communities, African American communities, in white communities? And so
he's got a response.
Because all right, so this is going back to when I was at school at University of Michigan. So there were two cases. There was one against the undergraduate university and one against the law school. The undergraduate university used a point system where it was awarding 20 points to certain minority groups, and Supreme Court said that was unconstitutional. The law school of course, because it's law school. They didn't have a point system. They had some kind of magical formula to accept people. And there was a white student who sued the school, but race was upheld in that decision because they didn't use a point system. And this is funny thing is, you know, going back to that, I just remember meeting with different people. My fraternity brothers were head of the Black Student Union, different groups. And the research we found, and all the research I found here, CNN, Huffington Post, whatnot, anyone listening on the radio, just Google who benefits most from affirmative action. And you will clearly find 100% of the time, unless, of course, you go to some site which is not being factual, African Americans are not even benefiting the most from affirmative action. And they really haven't since sometime in the 60s and 70s. And the thing is, white women are benefiting more from an affirmative action than Black people have. And that's been the case for 40-something years.
Wow.
And that, I mean, that's just, anyone can look at it. I mean, I'm looking at all kind of articles here.
That's good information.
And just looking up different stuff here. And I kind of knew this too, because the funny thing was, when we were at school at Michigan, we were doing a research, and it was interesting because, first off, Michigan, I mean, it's like 6% Black students anyway. So, yeah, it's not
Michigan is 60%.
No, 6%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like undergrad. It's like, no, I say 6%. So there's not many Black students there to begin with in the first place. Yeah. So the thing is, we were doing the research, I remember at that time, and we were finding because affirmative action is supposed to help underrepresented people in a specific category, there were white women in engineering, white men in nursing, and other departments which were benefiting more from affirmative action than minorities were. And I mean, that's just the truth of the matter.
I'm wondering where that, you know, why is that, that it doesn't bring the Black community in more when it really...
Affirmative action?
Yeah. How can we bring in... See,
because,
I'm into community building, like, and I would be like... I was out working in the community.
Based on Jamal's stating, affirmative action is completely missed its purpose, right?
What happened was,
where the statistics
in 1961, what happened was, I can find statistics for you, but let me just go through the history real quick. So 1961, President Kennedy used affirmative action for the first time in an executive order. And that was to ensure applicants are treated equally without race, color, or religion when it comes to federal contractors. Then, unfortunately, you know, Kennedy passed away, was assassinated. But the 1964 Civil Rights Act, that was when prohibited employment discrimination by employees of larger than 15 people. And that was, of course, you know, still with the race, religion, color, section, national origin. Now, in 1967... when President Johnson amended he passed the executive order in 1965, which would expand affirmative action to job opportunities for minorities. But in 1967, Lyndon Johnson amended his executive order to include women. Okay, so now you want some statistics about what I'm saying here. Okay, so let me go here. Sorry, give me one second. I got stuff all over the place.
Yeah, but what about, I want to talk about, so what about the some people will say that it actually destroys, and I kind of alluded to that in the comment I made, that the, you know, based on your merit, right, what they call the meritocracy. So, mm-hmm. like, you're destroying, you know, people who are less qualified are getting in as a result of, you know, the affirmative action policies that are in place.
Okay, yeah, people can make that argument, and... Well, you can look at what I've seen with the law school, why that was upheld, was the social resiliency aspect, I guess, of that, you could say. Mm-hmm. Because then there was a case against, after the Michigan cases, there were other cases where it was banned in California, affirmative action. But then the most recent case was someone named Fisher versus University of Texas in the university in 2016, mm-hmm. and Texas's policy was upheld. And just to give you some facts here about that, people will argue, let's say, okay, they're letting more minorities in based on factors which they're not qualified for, right? And then so I decided, okay, well, let me look and see what's really going on at some of these schools. And it's funny because the Ivy League schools, all use a legacy factor in their admission policy. And in fact, the fact is, obviously, there's many more minorities that don't have a legacy factor. And
what's a legacy factor?
A legacy factor is if you had a parent, I'm not sure if it extends to a grandparent, that attended that university, then you'll get more consideration to attend that school. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing, I'm reading an article from the Daily Princetonian, Princeton's newspaper, and just some of these statistics you can see is that Harvard, 12 to 16% were legacies. University of Pennsylvania, 13%. Yale, between 20 and 25%. Of course, because they're Ivy League, mm-hmm. they're not stating, they don't have a quota, but you know, they're not having a point system, but they're accepting people based on partially if their parent went to that school.
Got it. And I mean, a lot of schools do.
Right.
Do that,
so the system, it pretty much changed from the main thing was the Supreme Court at the time said, okay, you can't have a point system, but you can consider race in the decision. Now, however they come up with these decisions, who knows?
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, the smart schools, they're not necessarily going to have a standardized policy which says we use this or we use that. But then there's other statistics, too, which shows things like who benefits from affirmative action. Like, for example, another thing from another research from Princeton, which it shows is a prison sociologist. And it's funny because it showed that Asian Americans, all things considered with white students, would need an ACT score, an SAT score of 140 points higher to get into elite colleges because the colleges were saying, oh, well, we have too many Asian students or they're overrepresented, so we want to bring in more white students than Asian students.
So a bias towards Asians for having higher scores.
Hence the Harvard case that we're having
now.
Yeah,
we should talk about that. When we're going to go to a break here in a second, but when we come back, we should talk about that Harvard case.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to talk about Title IX because Jamal mentioned that affirmative action has predominantly helped women.
Oh, yes.
And so I think there's we need to talk about Title IX, what is Title IX, and how that's affected admissions as well as just the overall society. And so when we come back, we'll be able to talk a little bit more about the social resiliency score, affirmative action, Title IX. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Support for WMNF comes from our members at the Florida Law Group, protecting the rights of the wrongly injured since 1984. The Florida Law Group is dedicated to creating strong and lasting connections with their clients and our community. More at thefloridalawgroup.com.
Cracker, Campervan Beethoven. WMNF celebrates the genius of David Lowery. Campervan Beethoven is known for their crazy compound of sounds mixed into a playful blender. Cracker's brash irreverence and irony elevated them to the heights of alt-rock and roots rock.
You're a trash girl!
Cracker and Camper Van Beethoven, Friday, January 4th at Skipper Smokehouse. Go to WMNF.org for more information.
Take WMNF with you wherever you go with the new WMNF iPhone app. Listen to our live streams, check out upcoming concerts, and keep up with our news and public affairs coverage. It's free. Just look in the App Store for the WMNF player or follow the link at WMNF.org/listen.
WMNF and WMNF After Dark present Twist in the Dark, our third annual Dark Wave Showcase, featuring Sleeping Pills, Oots Oots, and South Florida's A Starry Night. Plus, DJs Mouse and Mark Paradise from Communion After Dark. The action takes place Saturday, January 5th at the Crowbar in Ybor City. Doors are at 8. Go to WMNF.org for more info.
Welcome back.
Yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that.
I know you like that. Welcome back to the Urban Cafe, WMNF 88.5. Everybody's laughing because they say, thankfully, Joshua is not a singer. That is not his career path.
Hey, he's doing
he
really
be like
well
Milli
today.
Vanilli.
Milli Vanilli. Oh, sure, that's right. Yeah. I just need to find me a...
Just lip sync it.
Yeah. I need to go to Germany and find my band. Right? It was a German band, right?
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
We just went on the Wayback Machine here, but we're going to be winning Grammy soon. True. So, again, you're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5, 813-239-9663. I know a lot of folks are probably staying indoors.
Call us up.
Let us know how you feel about affirmative action,
Join the discussion.
About anything we're talking about, social resiliency score, what are the problems with it, what are the benefits to it. Let us know. And if you are a benefactor,